nerds. You're listening to an episode on the Nerdcore podcast feed. If you're feeling generous, please consider pledging to a tier on our Patreon at patreon.com/thenerdcore. We have tiers as low as $1 per month. Thanks so much, and enjoy the episode.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Nerdcore podcast, a podcast that reviews movies and talks and nerd shit. This is episode 147. Yes. And we are here to delegate and host the second quarterfinal match in the Ultimate Director's Cage Match Classic. As always, it is your boy, the Nerd Gigano, here to delegate and watch as these fighters go one-on-one alongside my wonderful commentator. If you could picture him right next to me, is Young Yoda, coming from a nice day of working hard in the Dagobah. Say hello.
Let's get ready to podcast! What's up, bro?
Can you smell what Young Yoda is cooking?
Butter.
Yeah. Man, it's that time of the day. Podcast time. We're ready to get it rolling here. As always, you guys know that last week we saw Hitchcock basically sweep Burton out of the competition. Yeah. And today we are going to be looking at one also interesting match today, because from side B, Brad's bracket, we have Kurosawa going up against Guillermo del Toro. Brad, we've introduced both of these filmmakers, both amazing filmmakers in their respective areas, and just as good as anybody can get, to be honest.
Yeah. They're probably two of our best fighters in this, best directors anyway.
Yeah.
And both we both agree that we like each of these directors very much.
Oh, a lot. I love both of these. Guillermo is one of my favorites of all time. Kurosawa is not one of my favorites of all time, but it's one that I can really appreciate. So if you guys are listening to this and wondering, where the hell is the Golden Globe recap show? Sorry, we're not doing one this year. The Globes were a mess this year. But shout out to Christian Bale, who shouted out Satan. Oh, man.
Leo Burrito.
Yeah, I went back and listened to that, Brad, and he did say burrito.
He said burrito, right?
Yeah, I heard it. I don't know if it's some type of Mandela effect thing, but I heard burrito.
I don't know, but if I ever have a son, name him Chalupa.
Chalupa and taco.
Indeed.
Oh, man. Well, let's go again and get this Titan match underway, Brad. I will just say before we go into this that no matter the result, both of these directors win because they made it this far. But both are masters in their respected areas. And when I say that, I say that Kurosawa is basically created the samurai genre and that style of films that you see, and he's the one who perfected it. Guillermo, on the other hand,
also the spaghetti western.
The spaghetti western.
Don't leave that out.
Yeah.
And also helped in the creation of Star Wars, so don't forget that.
Yeah. Okay, Brian. All right. Yeah. All right, man. You gotta snap on me like that.
It's Guillermo, man. I gotta pile it on. It's Guillermo. So this is every Kurosawa match from now on. This is all I'm gonna say. I'm gonna say yes. He did samurai movies. He did western movies. Star Wars. So he was the foundational for all these great things in all these different genres.
Yeah. And Guillermo is responsible for basically creating his own style too. I mean, just the absolute magic realism that he...
Pan's Labyrinth? I mean, that's one of my favorites up there. That's probably in my top 10. Easy.
Yeah. It's one of my... it's one of my favorites, but the one that I love the most is The Shape of Water. But that's just an amazing fucking movie, too. Yeah, and it's going to be so hard to open this up. At least it won't be as hard to discuss this as the last episode.
The last episode kind of threw our hands up. We're like, yeah, Hitchcock.
Yeah, Hitchcock. But I also meant as the last episode, literally the one that's in the last 146 where we did the review.
Oh, you mean Persona.
Yeah. At least we'll be able to discuss
this.
Let's
never do that again. Never do that again.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, man. We never know what movies we watch, you know?
That's a good point, especially if we're going off all these different directors, too. Mm-hmm. And if there's a movie we haven't seen. Yeah. We kind of got lucky with that Kurosawa one that we didn't see. That was the noir.
Yeah. And after watching
we got lucky with that one.
Yeah. And after watching the Globes, kind of thinking, we got to get some ladies director months in here, man. Especially women like Lynn Ramsey. You know, she makes amazing movies.
Why don't we have a Sofia Coppola?
Oh, that's true. Hell, we can do like a whole ladies month. Just have like put in a bunch of different movies.
I think we're doing individual directors, men directors these past few. I think you gotta do them individual lady. I'm just throwing that. You just can't lump all the ladies into one month.
Man, I'd love to do Ava DuVernay month, you know, Sophia month, Lynn Ramsey month. Ooh, like we can watch, we need to talk about Kevin. Oh, that's a really good movie. This is just me spitballing ideas for future episodes. But, this is a really good match. The one that I know that there's a definite winner, but I just want to celebrate two titans of the industry here. I mean, Guillermo to me is one of the best directors of our modern times.
And you'll hear no disagreement from me on that.
Absolutely no disagreement. It's in the current state of cinema, it is amazing to see a director come with such prowess and stature. You know, he's created his own style and just done it so well.
In modern times, when you think of a fantasy movie, generally you go to Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah. Like genre films in general, man, it's amazing. He's really done so much, and my favorite is Shape of Water. But I mean, Pan's Labyrinth is a close second, and then you have I love The Devil's Backbone. I never see that one get so much credit.
The Devil's Backbone is great. Yeah, I really love that. Was the first? I think that was the first Del Toro film I saw, and really got me into that. But Pan's Labyrinth just blew my mind. Mm-hmm. Just the whole cinematic style and that, how it looked.
Yeah.
And amazing film.
Yeah. Just amazing. I'm like love it. I have it on DVD. I want to get that Criterion Collection thing I sold you. But there is sadly a reason why Kurosawa will win this one. And it's because, I mean, the influence on cinema, I mean, through time, where really that really Kurosawa has really passed the test of time. You know, he stood it. You know, it's through every year that we go by, we still have influence of Kurosawa in there.
Even though people may not realize it.
No.
Which, you know, he's still there, but people just don't know his name.
Yeah.
And I mean, as well as others.
And it's important that we do these months because we're starting to realize that a lot of the movies we like also have a lot of Bergman influence from what we've been watching.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, also technical matters. I mean, really, Kurosawa's...
So how much porn do you watch, Raul, after that?
Well, not in that regard, Brad, but I'm talking about, like, you know, like writing and type of shots that we see. Very, very Bergman-esque.
Well, I got to read this quote on Kurosawa from whatever this website, Kamentarama Films.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll have to do a little more digging, but I think they're right. But it says, in regards to Seven Samurai and how it affected Magnificent Seven Spaghetti Westerns, it says, Akira's version, by the way, gave us such innovations as the telephoto lens, the use of multiple cameras to capture the same action, and the image of the bad guys riding over the hill to attack. Each of these things had become standard techniques by the time of the Magnificent Seven.
Yeah.
And let's face it, Francis Ford Coppola with the helicopters coming over.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of the same thing, yeah.
A shot that's been replicated forever.
Yes. So that, if you think back, that might have been influenced by Kurosawa as well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just not with a with a
helicopter.
Obviously not helicopters, with, yeah.
With horses.
Yeah. And I mean, it just shows you like the extent of what Kurosawa has given the to cinema. I mean, I know, guys, this is a subjective competition. It's very subjective, but at the same time, we try to look at this through the scope of lens as influence on filmmaking. And Kurosawa has been there time and time again to really put a mark on what filmmaking has become.
He's definitely foundational. I mean, he's in the same realm as Hitchcock, same realm as Kubrick. Mm-hmm. He's there. And he may lose when it comes to Hitchcock or Kubrick because I don't think people know his name as well. And mostly because he's a Japanese director.
Yeah.
So I don't think he gets that kind of same regard just because he's from Japan. And he's not from either Britain or the States.
Yeah.
So we'll get to that when we get to that. But I think in the context that, yeah, we have to give Kurosawa his due.
Yeah.
And not saying anything about Del Toro. Del Toro, I think you look in 20, 30, 40 years now, yeah. Del Toro's going to be on the same pedestal as Kurosawa with his influence.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, truly the man is putting Mexican cinema on the map alongside Cuarón and Iñárritu. But it's in 20 or 30 years more, things will start to change for this conversation because a lot of the filmmakers which we have put in off on the side have not have time on their hands. And in 20 to 30 years, things will be very different in the conversation we're having about the best directors of all time.
Yeah. And I think you have to look at what Kurosawa did for Japanese film, and you're seeing what Del Toro and Alejandro and Cuarón, what they're doing. And I think you're going to have this a large population or a large mixture of Latino directors come in the fray in the future, just you had Japanese directors coming over with the likes of Miyazaki.
Yeah, yeah.
If I have to throw one out there.
And plus, the state of foreign films is very different now than it was 50, 40 years ago. I mean,
yeah, indeed.
Especially, I mean,
where films like Persona or Summer with Monica would not be looked at with distaste or awe, it'd just be like, that's film.
Yeah, yeah. And plus, I mean, I don't know how it worked for wide releases back then, but it's very different now with the rise of Netflix and stuff like this. If Kurosawa would have been alive now, would he have been born and making the same movies now? All of those would have been on Netflix, been produced by Netflix, and would have been monumental hits.
And I think the influence, even though, you know, people don't see Magnificent, you have to look at Magnificent Seven, which is one of the largest films, I think, in the Western genre, if not the largest. Fistful of Dollars. You have to look at that and have to realize that that comes from basically a Kurosawa script.
Mm-hmm.
With samurai, so it's just a retelling of it in the modern, the more modern Western era.
It's the influence of Kurosawa stretches and stretches so much, and hopefully in 20 and 30 years we'll be saying the same thing for Guillermo. I think it's getting there already. Yeah, and I think that Brad and I will agree on the same thing. I think Kurosawa passes over.
This is no offense at all to Del Toro.
Yeah.
But I think you give him 20, 30 years, he's going to be on that same pedestal Kurosawa is.
Yeah.
And Hitchcock is. And, I think it's just Kurosawa is a foundational director.
Yeah.
right now.
Yeah, and it's gonna be. I mean, next, Kurosawa would be facing up against whoever wins from Mel Brooks or Francis Ford Coppola. Probably gonna be Francis Ford Coppola. But
probably. I mean, don't bet out Mel Brooks. The only issue you have with Mel Brooks is he's in the comedy genre, and comedy doesn't really get the same respect as a lot of other genres.
But then you.
But then again, it is Coppola.
Yeah, and Coppola, I mean, like, really done a lot for filmmaking. I mean, yeah, how many? How many?
The gangster era wouldn't be here without him.
Yeah, and also how many shots that Coppola has done? I mean, how many shots that Mel Brooks have done has been tried to be replicated year and year and year. Unlike the helicopter or the several shots from like the.
Mel Godfather. Brooks did do the farting scene. So.
It's true.
That's like a comedy staple.
Oh yeah. Comedy fart jokes. Always says funny, right?
Always funny.
Always funny, right? Yeah. We have a little bit of time left to basically do something, and I guess I'm gonna have this conversation then. From what happened at the Globes. Not as the results. I'm gonna talk about what Cuarón was asked. By the way, very stupid headline written by Variety, because Cuarón did not rip, quote unquote, rip into the journalist. And before we say that, I mean, next week we will be doing Scorsese versus Kubrick. So that's going to be really interesting. And then the week after that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. The week after that.
That's your two picks.
That's my two picks.
I'm just going to let you fight with yourself.
Yeah. And then the week after that will be Mel Brooks and Francis Ford Coppola. And then we will start off.
That one's not as bad.
The semifinals. Yeah. But before we do this, I'm going to pull up the article just to get the actual words before people like say that, Raul, you put words in the journalist's mouth or something. Oh, man. Stupid headline by Variety, man. It's Cuarón was being completely respectful.
Well, you got to remember that they always exaggerate or
To try freaking, to create
fascination
to get the clicks.
Yeah,
just get the clicks, and it's so stupid.
Can't trust the news.
Yeah, and even when you can trust them, even when you want to trust them, they ask. Well, I mean, hey, the journalist has the right to ask this question, but I'm just saying, like, that's a really unfair question to ask. Ask that to the distributors. Yeah. So here, I'm gonna move my laptop a little bit over so that way I don't have to basically try to follow with one eye. So I'm gonna read this, guys. Following his Best Director win for Roma, Cuarón challenged a good journalist question backstage about the independent sector's concern over Roma's success this award season, which had a combined release between Netflix and theaters, rather than the traditional wide theatrical release, and how some claimed it marked the death of independent cinema. All right, this is what the reporter asked, guys. My question to you is, how many theaters did you think? So he asked them that about the whole cinema thing, and this is what he responded. My question to you is, how many theaters did you think that a Mexican film in black and white, in Spanish and Mixteco, that is a drama without stars, how big did you think it would be as a conventional theater release? Cuarón replied with his two freshly earned Golden Globes in tow. It was not a cosmetic release. The movie opened more than a month ago. Man, I'm going to really try to look at this through one eye because this is terrible. Damn, Pop, this is why I prefer windscreens. Hold up, guys. I'm just going to move this a little bit more. The movie opened more than a month ago and is still playing. That is rare for a foreign film. I mean, it is very unfair for rare to say that. He said, why don't you take the list of foreign films this year and compare the theatrical release to those things and for how long they've been playing, see how many are playing in 70mm. Cuarón has often been asked to choose sides between which is better, watching Roma on Netflix or on the big screen. Up to now, he made the point to emphasize the importance of both, telling Variety that the film's Los Angeles premiere, the complete experience of Roma, is unquestionably in a movie theater. Nevertheless, I think the experience of watching the film at home will have the same emotional impact. But when it comes to challenging the film's validity, not only as an indie foreign film, but also an awards contender, he drew the line. I just think the discussion between Netflix and other platforms in general should be over, he continued. I think those guys, platforms and theatricals, should go together and just realize that whatever they are doing to this discussion is hurting cinema. He went on to point out more problems with modern cinema. Something we must be very conscious of is that the theatrical experience has become very gentrified to one specific kind of product, he said. Right now, it's questionable that you have all these interesting filmmakers doing with different platforms because those platforms are not afraid of doing these films. And like Roma, I just hope that many others have the theatrical release and greater theatrical releases that I have had. And it's not here, but he also went out to point out that we'll see how it works out for Scorsese this year for The Irishman. But yeah. First, I want to say, yeah, I mean, shame on Variety for that headline. This was a respectful man, an acclaimed director being respectful and answering the question which was asked to him. And on the other hand, he is 100% right. Honestly, 100% right. Brad, do you agree with me when I say that he's 100% right?
I do agree. From what I could catch... I agree. I don't think whatever platform you choose, either in theaters or Netflix, really a film is a film and makes you feel. I'd much rather prefer it had a dual release, one where you could purchase the film at home and one, you know, you could go see in the theaters.
Mm-hmm.
That's just me, though. I'll get the same emotional thing either or.
Yeah.
Mostly because my theater is mostly empty anyway, so fuck.
Oh man, yeah, and it's I 100% agree, man. And if you guys are wondering what does he mean by the product is gentrified at the moment, and I think you all know exactly what he meant. It is a market full of superhero movies, blockbuster films. Not a film like Roma would have never gotten a distributor outside of Netflix. And I'm sorry for the people who disagree with me, but you have to look at the state of what we're living in right now with films. This is a movie that would not have been bought by a distributor other than Netflix.
Well, let's face it. The movies we see now are superheroes and sequels.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Or reboots and remakes.
That's all we see.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I'm glad that he said it because... The distributors have to take a shot at least in the dark with some of these. We have great filmmakers that want to make such great movies, but the distributors won't give them a chance. But hey,
and you know, it's a rarity when you get films in theaters. I believe Baby Driver was one of them. Mm-hmm. That was a rarity, and some other films that you do get, they flop because they're not a sequel. They're not a superhero film,
aka like Bad Times at the El Royale. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Jinx, you owe me a Coke. Yeah. it's yeah. And it's sad. I mean, it's really sad because somebody put a chart online which actually showed the difference in years of what was original content and what was actually like fabricated, you know, remakes and reboots and stuff like that. And it's decreasing over the years. And we have to start, distributors, producers, you have to start taking a chance and letting these filmmakers make the movies they want to make. And God damn it, stop giving us the 10th remake of a 1930 film that came out.
There's directors out there that we talk highly of, and the main reason we talk highly of them is because they don't do reboots or remakes, really, like Tarantino. Tarantino's, yeah. I'm not going to say all original because he pulls from here and there.
Yeah.
But what he puts together is generally an original film. And I think we're going to lose even more of that because of the antics of Harvey Weinstein, who basically shuttered his company that all he really did was produce original movies.
Yeah.
And because of an asshole like Weinstein, we're going to lose out on that. So
yeah.
Hopefully he goes to jail, though, forever.
Oh, yeah. I hope he goes to jail forever, along with Kevin Spacey, who is currently going through trial. So
and posting weird YouTube videos.
Yep.
So.
Yep. I hope you both get a nice little coffin where you get to rot in for the rest of your life. And you know, the Tarantino, the only other big franchise film he wants to do is, you know, Star Trek. And even then, that's not a huge franchise like Star Wars, Marvel, DC, and stuff like that.
It's kind of big in a way, but it's not to that point. And also, a Tarantino Star Trek is probably not going to be your normal Star Trek.
Oh, good God, no, it's not going to be. It's going to be very different. Very different. And, I'm sorry, what were you going to say?
No, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, that he's right. The Cuarón's right. And if Netflix is the company that is giving these filmmakers a shot and putting out these movies, then so be it. Then let them be the ones to distribute it. And it's not the end of, it's not the death of independent cinema. It's actually a rebirth of independent cinema. Because now
I think you net a wider audience.
Yeah, because now you have a bigger audience and you have a platform that so many people watch. It's a rebirth. It's a renaissance of independent cinema. Call it in the next 3 years, we are going to be seeing so many different movies switch over to Netflix because these filmmakers have an idea for a really good film, but companies like Paramount, Sony, Columbia, they don't want to distribute it because it's not a quote-unquote marketable movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what are some Netflix originals we can throw out there?
Mowgli.
Mowgli was one. Well, Mowgli was bought up.
Yeah.
But Mowgli definitely won.
Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Consider that a remake.
Yeah.
Kind of a remake.
Yeah. Really?
Inventioning.
Reinvention, yeah. Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Ballad of Buster Scruggs. There you go.
That was not going to make a lot of money in theater releases.
No.
Yeah.
But it was so good.
Cam. Cam on Netflix. You know, yeah, bought up by Netflix at that film festival would not have been a huge money maker in the compared to the other Blumhouse produced movies.
I mean, and I don't think A Quiet Place was a Netflix original.
No, it wasn't. No, that was a Paramount. Paramount distributed that.
But anyway, list goes on. Yeah, I mean, we could look it up and keep going.
Mudbound.
All these original content.
Mudbound last year.
That's another.
Yeah.
I'm honestly surprised. I think it's Green Book. I'm honestly surprised Green Book made it in the theaters.
Oh, yeah. I'm surprised, too. And even then, like you said, if they would have, if you look at Roma, if that would have gotten a big distributor, it would have been a very limited release.
Yes.
We're talking like 20 theaters at least showing it. Yeah. Cuarón himself can't sell this, and I think that's Cuarón himself cannot sell this movie. I know it's a big household name, but no director alone can sell the movie itself, especially when its movie contains no big star actors. For Christ's sake, the man directed a woman that was a teacher on her first acting gig. I mean,
yeah. So I mean, and you look at it. If Bad Times at El Royale can't make it,
yeah,
there's not hope for much else.
With a bunch of stars, John Hamm, Chris Hemsworth. We're talking like huge stars. It can't sell.
Huge.
And Drew Goddard is a pretty well known director as well. So,
Jeff Bridges. That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, Jeff Bridges is in there too. Yeah, and it's. That's just the way I'm looking at this, and I think the Cuarón's 100% right. That journalist has a really stupid question, but it's true what he says about that this conversation is hurting cinema, and the conversation has to end between the distributors and the digital platforms, and realize that this kind of mentality of a film coming out on Netflix ain't the same thing as a movie being released in theaters is hurting the state of cinema.
Well, I think that they need to stop this war between digital media and what you see in the movie theater.
Yeah.
So they just need to just squash that, because you're going to slowly see, especially if new and interesting ideas are coming out on the Netflix platform, people are just going to stop going to the movie theater. They're tired, and they show Bumblebee, at least in the state, showed it. You know, they're tired of some of these movies.
Yeah. I know what you guys are going to say, but Raul and Brad, one of your most anticipated movies is a remake in It. I'm like, yeah, I know. I watch my Star Wars. I watch my comics. I watch my remakes. But guess what? I still went and saw Roma in theaters. I paid money for Roma in theaters.
Now I'm going to say, if they come back with that It shit, like, compare the first It.
Yeah.
I think this new It, you can't even call it as a remake or a sequel, just because the first It was complete shit. At least half of it.
Yeah. I mean, my whole family, I mean, my cousin, my tia, my cousin, my other cousin, we went to go see this movie. My tia paid for us, and she paid good money for this movie. And that's a movie that went into the pockets of all this cast and crew. We went to go see an original film. And I will name you a bunch of other. I bought Hereditary on Blu-ray. What else did I do? I watched, what's it called? Sorry to Bother You. I paid money to watch Sorry to Bother You, and I'm so glad. Because that was an original as it can get of a film.
Oh, Black Klansman?
Black Klansman. Original film. I saw that in theaters. I know I watched The Star is Born. That's like the fifth remake of a movie. But, I mean, I watched this whole You Were Never Really Here. I bought that on Blu-ray. That's an original film. I like my comic book movies and my superheroes and my Star Wars and my It. But at the same time, it's not everything that I have to watch, because I want to support filmmakers and their original ideas. Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah. So, guys, as the little mini discussion to kind of elongate the episode, where we're at 32 minutes. So, thank you all for listening to this. This is a nice discussion at the end and the match. We hope you all have a wonderful day. Go ahead and leave a 5-star review on your podcast app of choice. Then go ahead and follow us on Twitter at the Nerdcore, _ Instagram at the Nerdcore, Facebook page the Nerdcore Pods. Follow Race and Bargain 98 on Instagram, Warlord Hitman 98 on Twitter. And if you want to get a shout out like that, all you gotta go is go. Excuse me. All you gotta do is go to www.patreon.com/nerdcore and pledge to the $15 tier to get a shout out just like that, pins and stickers as they're made, and a postcard every month from us here at the team. And I'm sorry if you can hear my brother singing in the background and playing with the dog. Yeah. A couple more days and I'm back in my apartment. It'll be silent. So thank you all for listening. As always, hope you all have a wonderful, wonderful time whenever you're listening to this. To all the Patreon supporters, we love you guys. So shout out to all of them, from the one who's literally on this call with me right now, just because he wants to listen to Alex's Bad Movie Club. As always, this has been your Nerd Chicano. I'm signing off. Young Yoda, send him into the podcast, boy.
All right, Raul. Thank you for being host, as always. Or referee, in this case. thank you guys for listening. Thank you to all our supporters. Thank you to all our Patreon members. And, we've just hit over 17,000 listens. So, thank you all.
Yeah.
And I guess in the next fight, who is the next fight? Oh, in the next fight, Raul's going to have a brain bleed. Young Yoda out.